everybody, it's Gibbon time!
There you go, folks. That intro didn't quite work as expected, but this is Patrick's National Bugle Radio and my ACH show, our joint show we do every month. So, Patrick, do you want to take over and start it up for your listeners?
Sure. Hey, gang, welcome to that that beginning of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, Republic Broadcasting .org, your home for free speech, and for this show, which once a month is called Boomer Califragilistis Expialidocious or something like that. I don't know. It's hard. But what's not hard is going to republicbroadcasting.org, clicking on the donate button, and sending a donation. And then also going to nationalbugle.com and downloading the co-certified app, because it's totally awesome and it will help you lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle. Okay, so this is a show. I'm hosting my show. Andy's hosting his show. And we're going to get it all figured out. But first things first, I don't want to spend the whole show on it because I've been pushing it really hard, but the Biden executive order that allows these four officers in his cabinet to, at their own discretion, designate somebody as collaborating with Russia in its efforts to undermine our democracy, interfere in our elections, and undermine our democracy and institutions. These four people designate somebody, then they can block your assets, meaning you can't buy or sell or do anything. Wow, buy or sell. You can't buy or sell. That's kind of the mark of the beast, isn't it? And these four individuals, can you guess what they all have in common?
I think I've heard you talk about it. I believe that they're all ethnically Jewish. Is that correct?
Yes. So it's Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. And they're all ethnically Jewish. And do you know what the odds of four random people, these four, because I'm not cherry picking, these are the only four officers who have anything to do with this. They're the ones who are named in the law. And what are the odds that all four of them would be Jewish? If you assume that Jews are 2% of the American population?
It's an interesting figure. That's around the 6-point-something million to one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's over 6 million to one, 6.25 million to one to be precise. So it's a big deal, and I don't really want to talk about it over and over and over again, but I got to keep pounding away on it until Tucker or other people. I don't listen to certain other people. I don't listen to Alex Jones, but I other people need to pick up on this. And I haven't heard anything from other sources besides where I got it from originally, which was the I confirmed everything by reading the order that was posted on the whitehouse.gov website, which is the president's official website. But yeah, it was I read about it in the American Thinker. And have you heard anything about it?
All I've heard about it is from you. And I listen to lots of different shows throughout the week. Literally, I'm you know, your show, David Duke's show, TDS on the rightstuff.biz, Jeff Rentz's show. I mean, just lots and lots. And there's Ted Austin Brower show. And I know I'm missing some out, and I apologize for that because I'm trying to think of them all. But I've got my little list here. If I just go into my favorites and just any others, just to give people the idea Of what I do go through, shows on Eurofolk Radio, Dennis Fetcho, Inside the Eye Live, John Friend, Rick Wiles sometimes, Richie from Boston, the famous YouTuber. And yeah, that's, and then there's some occasional ones I listen to as well. So there's a lot of things that I listen to, but you are the only person that I've heard speak about it. And so if you had said Patrick, then I wouldn't know. And the interesting thing as well, if you can clarify for the audience, because I've not mentioned it on my show, so it'll be the first that many of my audience have heard. Essentially, these four Jews in the Biden cabinet, this executive order gives them the power to seize the assets of anyone that they suspect of working on behalf of Russia. Or what's the exact sort of, you know, what do you have to do to get your assets seized, is basically the question.
It's very, very vague. And so it's directly or indirectly, and not necessarily even intentionally, but assisting in any way Russia's efforts, because, you know, Russia has these efforts, the Russian Federation's efforts to interfere with our elections. And we saw how vaguely that was defined during the Trump election, to undermine our democracy and institutions. And that's we see how that's been used, very, very vague. And then, oh, what was the other one? There was a few categories, but several categories, but there was only a few that that really stuck out at me. And I forgot what the other one was. But you know, something that I'll have to pull it up. There's no due process. You just have your assets. They use the term blocked, but this is what happened to the Iranian government in 1979. Their assets were blocked, and they weren't unblocked until, what was it, 2017 or 2016? I guess it would have been 2016 when they had the Iran nuclear accord, and erroneously it was being reported that the United States was giving them tens of billions of dollars. No, they simply unfroze assets that they had frozen decades earlier. It was the Iranians' money. So that's it. Was this executive order is from April 15th. And if you go to nationalbugle.com, you can find it. But if you know how to navigate whitehouse.gov, which isn't too hard, you can find it on whitehouse.gov. And it's a big deal. I'll stop talking about it when other people start talking about it. But there you go. So yeah, I'm just clicking on it right now. Whitehouse.gov. Right now it's if you're at nationalbugle.com and you're in the, I guess it's in the election and politics column, you scroll most of the way down. I think it's the ninth headline by now, because other headlines push it down, but you can still find it there. So now it's not the only thing that they can use against us. I mean, they've just been targeting people. You know, they targeted Flynn, General Flynn, with I forgot which act it was, but, you know, saying that it wasn't the Neutrality Act. It was some act from the late 1700s that they had never prosecuted anybody on. They got Paul Manafort, and I guess it got him partly on failing to register as a foreign lobbyist. Well, I mean, basically everybody in Washington is a lobbyist for Israel, practically, and nobody's ever required to. No, they never prosecute anybody on this. So they prosecuted Manafort on it, threw him in prison, and now they're going after Rudy Giuliani on it. And so they take these obscure laws that aren't enforced. It's the selective enforcement. But of course, this is an executive order. It's not even a law. So, here it is. Oh, well, this isn't the greatest radio, but I'm trying to scroll through.
I, You try and find it, and I'll give you a little bit of news that's just come in from Russia, Patrick, because I saw this. This is only an hour ago on the BBC. There's been a Russia school shooting,
Okay.
children and teacher killed in Kazan. Seven children and a teacher have been killed in a shooting at a school in the Russian city of Kazan. And the interesting thing is it says, responding to the shooting, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he would review the country's gun control laws. Now, the interesting thing that this links in with what you said about this executive order, well, firstly, when I saw that, whenever you have these school shootings in America or any sort of these mass shootings, there's been a lot of skepticism as to, if it really went down in the way that it's officially reported. But what always seems to happen is a justification for more gun control. And we know that these people want to get Americans disarmed for their own nefarious purposes. And so that concerned me when I saw that straight away after it, that Vladimir Putin said he'd be looking at the gun control laws in Russia. I have no idea what those gun control laws are. I understand that when the Bolsheviks came in, they seized everybody's guns. So at some point between the Soviet era and the modern Russian era, these gun people were allowed to own guns again. But that was just, I thought, oh, they're getting this now in Russia, and it seemed very odd. So I just wanted to throw that in. Have you found that thing you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, I mean, the last thing was activities that undermine the peace, security, political stability, or territorial integrity of the United States, its allies, or its partners. And that's very vague. But with regards to this news out of Russia, so when Vladimir Putin was first appointed as prime minister, and he was supposed to be an agent for the Jewish oligarchs. He was in there to try to somehow save the situation for them because Vladimir, I'm sorry, Boris Yeltsin had like maybe 2% support, 2% support in they were heading into presidential elections in the year 2000. So in 1999, everybody the Jewish oligarchs were worried because they had stolen the 1996 elections. That's pretty well admitted right now. They had stolen the 1996 elections, which had legitimately been won by the Communist Party leader and what might be considered anti-Semite, Gennady Zyuganov. And it had been stolen to keep Yeltsin in power, but there was no way you could, with Yeltsin as unpopular as he was by 1999, that stealing the elections for him again, and he was so alcoholic, it wasn't a prospect. So they brought in Putin, who was supposed to be their boy, and he utilized these bombings, apartment bombings in Moscow, blamed it on the Chechens, and went hardcore on the Chechens. And there was speculation at the time, and I don't know. But there was speculation at the time that some of these bombings were false flags to give Putin a chance to rally people around the flag. I don't know if it's true or not. And here's the thing about Putin. I don't know about all of his tactics. I don't know about all of his elections. All I do know is that in the end, he has used his grip on power to improved considerably the situation for the typical Russian person. He's not at war with the Russian people. He might use illegal means. I don't know. So that's one thing I wanted to say. The other thing I wanted to say was regarding you hear a lot of from the gun, what you could call the gun lobby in the United States, about everybody taken away, every bad person took away people's guns. So Saddam Hussein, the first thing he did when he got into power was take away people's guns. Adolf Hitler, the first thing he did when he got into power was take away guns. The Russian communists, when they got into power, the first thing they did was take away guns. And I haven't independently verified any of this, and I'm going to take it all with a grain of salt until I do. Because obviously, while Saddam Hussein was president, people had lots of guns. There were guns all over the place, Because as soon as he left office, there was a civil war. People had guns then. But even when he was in office, you always had these scenes of weddings or whatever, and people were shooting off guns to celebrate. So it seemed people had guns. I think the thing about Hitler taking away everybody's guns was probably a lie. I know that the Bolsheviks tried to disarm 50,000 Czech soldiers that were on the Trans-Siberian Railroad, which kind of kicked off the Russian Civil War or fueled it. So there may be something to it, but all I'm saying is I'm taking that with a grain of salt until I can independently verify it. So back
That's
to
interesting. Yeah, well, what it is, Patrick, is you just reminded me years ago when I first got into this and I started off with the likes of David Icke and Alex Jones. I actually bought a T-shirt from Alex Jones. It was really nice, actually, but I know I definitely have one. I don't know if I bought this one as well, but at the same time, one of his T-shirts had a slogan on it: "Mass murderers agree, gun control works." And you had a picture of Mao and a picture of Stalin and a picture of Hitler on there. And I remember that. But the one that I had, and it lasted me quite a few years. It's quite well made. It was like a DEA T-shirt, with the navy blue, and then you've got the yellow writing on it with DEA. Well, it actually was navy blue T-shirt, and it had in yellow writing "Tyranny Response Team" on both sides. And I used to quite like that T-shirt. I wouldn't wear something like that today, but we're going back, sort of quite a few years, probably getting on for 20 years now. But yeah, that just what you said there just reminded me of that old Alex Jones T-shirt. I don't know if he still makes that one. I don't really go over there, but yeah, that just brought back that memory, Patrick.
Yeah, and one thing about guns in the United States is people do have guns, and people having all these guns in their houses. Well, all right, so we haven't been rounded up and put in FEMA camps, but an awful lot is going on. An awful lot's going on, despite people having guns in their houses. And the main problem that we face right now in the United States isn't that we don't have guns in our houses. The main thing is that we're not we the people who are under attack, the largely white normal population that is under attack and being targeted for minority status, hated minority status, we're completely incapable of organizing ourselves to express ethnic interests. And that is the problem we have. Despite having all these guns in our houses, the guns aren't doing us. And I'm not a gun control advocate, obviously, but I'm just saying that having these guns isn't making it any easier for us to organize and voice our interests and get anything done.
Yes, well, and on that executive order, I mean, I could fall foul of that in the UK if they applied it here, because I regularly say I'd rather be ruled over by Vladimir Putin, because Vladimir Putin's a nationalist. He's seen a surge of Christianity in his country. He stands up to the LGBTQ lobby, all these different things. He's basically a nationalist traditionalist and promotes Christianity, and that's a far cry from what they do in the UK, and I much prefer that sort of thing here. So if they introduced an EO like that here, then effectively they could take all my property, Patrick.
Yeah, and there you go. And I say similar things, and we'll see what happens with that. But we're up on our break, so we're going to take that and we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off LLC, 417-932-6419.
We are right back, and we were just talking a little bit about Vladimir Putin, and it's not as if he is the be-all and end-all, and you hear people saying critical things of him, and of course, without independently verifying a lot of what's said, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but I do think it would be pretty hard to argue that the Russian people aren't better off now than they were 20 years ago, 20, 21 years ago, or 22 years ago when he came on the scene. And it would be pretty hard to argue that the white Americans and normal Americans aren't much worse off now than we were, say, 20 years ago.
Yes. Well, I've even got a table that I may be able to find that Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson sent to me. But what I always say about Vladimir Putin, and I'm just bringing up the table now, it just this goes back to 2013, and it's just entitled 15 Years of Putin, How Russia Changed in the 15 Years Since Putin Came to Power. And I'll give you some of the figures, because you've got different figures for 1999 on the left and 2013 on the right, and I'll drop it over to you, Patrick. You might find it useful. So the average GDP per person in 1999 was $1,320 US. In 2013, it was $14,800 US. The national debt in 1999 was 78% of GDP, and in 2013 it was 8% of GDP. The pension in 1999 was 499 rubles, and in 2013 it was 10,000 rubles. And then finally, the average income in 1999 was 1,522 rubles, and in 2013 it was up to 29,940 rubles. So you can see the state the country was in when it was still firmly under the control of these oligarchs. And this is why I believe they hate Putin so much, because they regarded him, as you said earlier, as a safe pair of hands for them. But and so then they thought, right, Russia's in the bag, so now we can go and destabilize all the Middle East. But of course, while they were doing that, Putin was building it up his way behind the scenes, and by the time that they caught wind of that, it was too late. He'd established his power and he'd started, you know, taking property back from these oligarchs. And there's still cases in the European Union. They've brought in the European court one of these oligarchs. They've said, Russia needs to pay this person $50 billion or something ridiculous on some case because Putin took his company back that he basically stole from the Russian people. So you can see where the traitors are, and you can see where the patriots are. That's my view, Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and regarding these oligarchs, these weren't people who just started up they weren't people like Bill Gates who started up Microsoft in a new industry and built it up. These were people who were able to take advantage of the privatization laws and acquire companies and assets that already existed. They didn't build up anything. They were able to take advantage of privatization laws, which were put in place by the Jewish advisors, the Jewish economic advisors that had been sent by the United States government, by the Treasury Department. So you had Lawrence Summers, who was later was the Secretary of Treasury, like a few years later was Secretary of Treasury, and then he went on to become president of Harvard, and then Obama's economic advisor. But he was a high-ranking official at the Treasury Department. He went over, he brought over Harvard economist Jeffrey Sachs, who had been, doing shock therapy in South America during the 80s. Other Jews, there was one, what was his name? He messed up Iceland later on in the early 20th century. His name slipped my mind. There's several other prominent Jews who were over there, set up this privatization scheme with privatization minister Anatoly Chubais, who managed to become an oligarch himself in the process. Whereby every Russian, and this is in the mid-1990s when everybody was poor, when the ruble wasn't worth anything, every Russian was issued a voucher. And with the voucher, they could purchase shares in Russian companies. Oh, it sounds fair. Everybody got one. But the thing is, most people were like really struggling, and they weren't going to purchase shares. They were willing to sell these vouchers, and they had no idea what they were worth, and they were willing to sell them. But the only people who could buy them, you had to be a Russian citizen. But what this privatization cabal did is they matched up, you know, well-connected Russian Jews who had citizenship and had the right to buy the vouchers with international Jewish finance, you know, the George Soroses. They hooked them up, and so this small number of well-connected Jews who had access to foreign capital were able to buy up all these vouchers at its complete bargain basement prices and use them to buy up the gas company, buy up the oil company, buy up banks, buy up everything, and that's how it happened. And it was scandalous, and it completely impoverished the Russian people. But we're up at the break, and we'll be right back.
No escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer, it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer, Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer. Excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
We are back. Okay, so I want to skip over away from Russia, get a little bit closer to the UK because you're in the UK, but not all the way. We'll stop at the channel. And are you familiar with the big to-do in France, where you've got last month you had a bunch of retired military brass who are saying France is on the verge of a civil war because Macron fails to take steps against the these little Islamic caliphates that are developing in the country, and now a anonymously signed similar letter, which includes large numbers of active duty personnel. Are you familiar with this?
I am, Patrick, and I certainly could go into that. But before I do, I just wanted to throw this at you to top and tail the Russian situation, okay. Because I have the names, and this is very brief from the Synagogue of Satan. In 1992, privatization begins in earnest in Russia. As a result of this, the vast wealth of Russia ends up in the hands of the so-called seven oligarchs, all of them new billionaires who backed Boris Yeltsin with money and media support. The seven are Boris Berezovsky, Vladimir Kaczynski, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, Mikhail Friedman, Alexander Smolensky and Pyotr Avon, all Jewish, and one Russian, Vladimir Potanin. And Vladimir Potanin was used as the other's public liaison to the government. So the non-Jew was used as the liaison. So I found that interesting. And the other thing, for the benefit of your audience, and then we'll get into France, folks, Patrick regularly does Boomer Vision, which gave me the idea for this show. And when he does, he plays Layla at the start.
And essentially, I've got an interesting fact about Layla. It was written, the song was written by Eric Clapton and Jim Gordon. Now, we all know who Eric Clapton is, so the Wikipedia page on Jim Gordon states, James Beck Gordon, born July 14, 1945, is an American former musician and songwriter. Gordon was a popular session drummer in the late 1960s and 1970s and was the drummer in the blues rock group rock supergroup Derek and the Dominoes. In 1983, in a psychotic episode associated with undiagnosed schizophrenia, Gordon murdered his mother was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. As of 2021, he remains incarcerated at the California Medical Facility. How awful. A glass of water for Dr. Slattery. So whilst Dr. Slattery is recovering from that disturbing fact, the situation in France, what I can tell you sort of, well, not firsthand directly, but my mother, she went on a sort of cruise a few years ago, and she couldn't actually get out of Bordeaux. They said to people, be very careful. And it was all this Islamic trouble in that area. And if you look at some of the old famous landmarks, there's some big fountain. I forget what it's called. Well, I didn't know what it was called in the first place, but I've seen it in pictures. And you see old pictures of it, it's all lovely and looks beautiful in Paris. And then now it's all completely covered in graffiti. And essentially, they've been pumping this Islamic side into France for so long. And we know that the French people aren't as compliant as a lot of other people around the world. There's something about them that they seem to be far more resistant to governments than most of us in other countries.
History and unruly history, that's right.
Yeah, and so as a result, I think that that spirit still exists within elements of their military. And not just that, I think the military are probably recognising that that's in the people, and the people are really starting to get up in arms about it. And they're starting to say, we don't want this anymore. We don't want these people here and stuff like that. And of course, that's going to make the powers that should not be extremely uncomfortable, because the whole purpose of them being there is they're the replacement population for the white people of France. And if the white people of France have their way and get them out of their country, or if indeed there is a civil war, then it kind of goes out of the hands of the people who want to Islamicize France and, you know, make it a non-white, predominantly non-white country, Patrick. That is my opinion of what's going on. I think it would be unlikely to see some sort of civil war. I think you'd need a certain element of the military siding with the people and stuff like that. You know, these sort of uprisings don't tend to ever seem to happen in the West. I mean, there was a situation with the breakup of Czechoslovakia, and you could argue that was a more Western country, but you tend to see these sort of coups and stuff like that in African and South American countries, but not in Europe. But I guess anything is possible. What are your thoughts?
If you were going to see it anywhere, I think you would see it in France. And you've got the relatively recent history. Charles de Gaulle came to office, I believe it was 1959, and the Fourth Republic was, and I'm not an expert in French history, but the Fourth Republic was failing to address all sorts of problems that it had. It had been trying to keep together the empire, but it lost Vietnam earlier in the decade, or passed it on to the United States to deal with. And it was giving up on its most of its North African empire, I guess, like Morocco and Tunisia, but Algeria wanted to hold on to, and so it was engaged in this this war, I guess you'd call it a war of independence. It was considering Algeria to be part of metropolitan France, and of course Algeria had been part of France since before, what was it, before Bordeaux, or one of the regions that is in the, I guess, where Nice, the city of Nice is. Nice was later to join the French Republic than Algeria was. And so they were trying to hold on to Algeria. And I don't remember all of the details. I do remember that France, mainland France, was in danger of being invaded by its own army, which was in Algeria. You had a danger of
an invasion from Algeria of the French army invading France, which is kind of a weird situation. And I'm sure I'm not explaining it well because I don't understand it well. But Charles de Gaulle was brought in basically to avoid that situation. And he was brought in as the, I guess, the prime minister, a Fourth Republic prime minister. But he drew up a constitution of de Gaulle, for de Gaulle, and by de Gaulle. And that's the origins of the Fifth Republic, which concentrated a lot more power in the office of the president. He was, I guess he was almost ousted in maybe 1961 or 62. He was eventually ousted in 69, by massive demonstrations, and he resigned midterm. So you do have this type of history in France where people go out in the streets, make demands, and you get big changes. Governments, a sense, I mean, in the case of the Fourth Republic ending and a new constitution being drawn up, and even in the case of 1969, which is living memory for some people, where a president is chased out of office. So these things happen, and if it would happen anywhere, I would think it could happen in France. Here's a question. So a few years ago, you had that whole Yellow Vest movement. And the Yellow Vest movement, initially it was over gas taxes and things like that, but it was a movement mostly of white French people. And I don't recall it making ethnic demands, and it was going on and on and on. And then it fell out of the news cycle eventually. Maybe was it pushed out by Black Lives Matter? Was it pushed out by something else? Whatever happened with that Yellow Vest movement, and what do you think about the potential for a Yellow Vest type movement to gain a foothold in France now with all of this stuff going on and with elections scheduled for next year, early next year?
Well, it's interesting. The situation with immigration into Europe as a whole, I mean, in the UK, we were getting West Indians and Jamaicans from the African side, and then, you know, Indians and Pakistanis and Bangladeshis and what have you. But as you pointed out, it relates to your colonial background. And, of course, France was, its colonial background was more Algeria, as you said. And so these people, for example, if we look at England again, West Indies and Jamaica, there's not like a particular Muslim population there. When you look at Bangladesh and India and Pakistan, well, you've got Hindus, you're going to have some Muslims in there. And we do have some issues in the UK. You've probably seen, you know, footage on the internet of, you know, Muslim gangs saying, you know, this is our country now and stuff like that. Some of them do see it that way. But there tend to be more of them just go along to get along type of thing. Whereas in France, there's some sort of real hatred that, of course, has been, you know, encouraged by the media. So no surprise there. Imagine my shock. In order to get the Algerians in France to hate French people because of their colonial past, because the media will tell them that the France basically pretty much enslaved Algeria and occupied their country and behaved awfully to them. And of course, when you look at the architecture and what have you and what was done to that city, it seems to be that they benefited more from that colonial presence than other African nations that are completely third world. But that is not the way that the narrative today is going to be shaped, is it, Patrick?
No, I remember I had a professor who was a Muslim, and he would point out that, you know, Algeria was the most industrialized country, I guess, besides South Africa on the African continent, that it was very industrialized. You know, it had not only its own oil pumping capacity, but its own oil refining capacities, which other countries didn't have. And I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about Algeria. I remember did you ever read the novel The Stranger, L'Étranger? It was by Albert Camus.
I read haven't
in French and in English. It was very short, and so it was pretty famous, and that's why it was assigned in French classes, because it was short. But it was about a guy
I guess this is an existentialist novel, and it was about a guy whose name was Marceau, and he lived in Algiers, and he worked in Algiers, and he had his mother was at a an old folks home, like a 2-hour bus ride from Algiers out in the countryside somewhere, and he got notification that she died, and this would have taken place, I guess, in the 30s, and he gets on a bus and he goes out, and then he comes back, and he's got a girlfriend and whatever, and he gets invited to somebody's beach house, and he goes out to the guy's beach house. And for whatever reason, the guy gives him a pistol, and then they're walking on the beach. And there's some Arab with a knife, and Marceau winds up shooting him. And then there's a trial, and at the trial it comes out that he didn't cry at his mother's... he smoked a cigarette at the side of his mother's coffin, and a few other things, and then he gets executed eventually. I can't remember how it ends. It was weird, and I'm only bringing it up just because it was a snapshot, because Camus apparently he grew up in Algiers, in French Algeria, and it really didn't seem that bad. I mean, it was, you had these two societies. You had a very large French society, a lot of whom were Jewish, by the way. A lot of the French in Algeria were Jews. And then you had a lot, it was maybe 20% French and 80% native. And I don't know. It probably wasn't that bad. But you wound up, if it was that bad, then the question is, why did so many Algerians and other North Africans subsequently immigrate to France if being around the French was so bad? And they
that
did.
That is always the question, isn't it? Absolutely. And how long are we to the break, Patrick?
We've got about 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes. Okay. So you got something good. Let's hear it.
Well, yeah, I don't think this is what I was looking for. Michael Walsh, he said to me once about, because he was in the Merchant Navy and he went all around different countries in the world in the, 50s and what have you. 60s, things like that, and essentially he was saying about something being the Paris of Africa, and I've been trying to look it up while we've been talking, and there's an article from the New York Times in their archive, originally published in 1984, and it talks about Senegal, and there's just a bit here where it says, not only for its stylish women does Dakar live up to its billing as the Paris of Africa. Senegal is still economically dependent on France, with the Senegalese franc pegged to the French franc. Dakar, once an outrageously expensive city for Americans, is a relative bargain, well, back in 1984. So again, you see this element here of, the actual French culture in another country in Africa, Senegal, which I actually went to on a day trip years ago. I went over to the Gambia with an ex-girlfriend for a week, and you could do a day trip into Senegal. It was like, well, that's another country to visit that you don't really fly to. And we saw some old mud hut villages and stuff. We were guided around, and there was a guy who was the head of the village, and he had all the women were his wives and stuff like that. But yeah, so it's quite interesting to see how, the culture that was there. And as you say, and what Camus wrote, it doesn't seem as bad as the media drum it up today. But I firmly believe that the plan has always been to bring people into white countries and then agitate them against the white population to do the bidding of the people who brought them in. And there's the age-old question that if somebody let a load of tigers out into your city and they started killing people, would you blame the tigers or would you blame the people that let them out, Patrick?
Exactly. And, then there's one other question, and I'm posing it to you. Once the white question, once the permanent, what is it, the final solution to the white question has been implemented, what happens to the people who were used to turn us into a minority? What happens to the various third worlders in Europe and North America then? What do you think? I mean, we're talking about speculation, but what do you think?
Well, was it the Katyn Forest massacre? They got rid of all these, the Russians, basically, all these sort of Polish intellectuals and what have you. And then, of course, they went after the people that shot them because they wanted to destroy all the evidence. So all these foot soldiers on the ground that are, you know, essentially mobilizing these people, they're going to be the people who knew too much. So they're going to be the first people to go afterwards, I would believe, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, would the United States just become, or other countries just become, kind of a Gaza, where you know, the Israelis don't feel bound by certain niceties of international law or humanitarianism? They don't feel bound by it. And I would think an America or a Britain or a France, where you know, white people have been completely marginalized, well, then what's next? I think it would be something like that. But we're up on the break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, KosherTify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
We are back, and where do we go, Andy? Where do we go?
Well, I think we're in the last 6 minutes of the show, and
four minutes or so on this show.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's gonna work well with mine as well when I add the music on at the end. So, yeah, basically, I see that there's this massive plan that's finally coming to fruition to essentially use the people that they
put into the West against the indigenous populations of the West. And it's getting so ridiculous now when, you know, I understand that in America there's these awards, financial awards to farmers or something like that, but they won't be given to any white farmers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think and these sorts of things. And it's so blatant that if it was done to any other race, they'd be jumping up and down. So I think that they now think that they've got the power. But one thing that concerns me in the UK is they keep talking about Israel's roadmap out of the virus. And the way that they did it was by getting most of their people vaccinated and making them carry them vaccination passports. And they're saying, oh, it's worked so well in Israel, so we have to follow them. Well, the Israel's Mossad, their motto is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. So if they, clearly their media and their apparatus in the West is very anti-white. So what better way than to say that they've got all their people vaccinated, whether they have or they haven't, whether they've had the same vaccine, if they have they had the same vaccines as we're getting in the West? We don't know. But use that as a model. Oh, it works. So all the Western countries will follow their model. And of course, then we look at their Mossad motto, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. So that is a grave concern to me, because this talk of vaccine passports, they might not mandate it in your government, but if all the companies that it's all corporate now, if they say, oh, you can't come into our store because you'll be a risk to our customers and our staff, then you're either going to have to get vaccinated or you won't be able to buy food. Back to you.
And that's the thing that we could push back against, you know, without our guns. It doesn't matter whether we have guns or not. We could push back against these things by in fact, preemptively, by just going against, for instance, mask laws. And, if we were to establish ourselves with mask laws, where we were going into Walmarts, just how easy is it for BLM to organize a looting riot, where they go into these stores and they loot and they break and they steal and they burn? They do this in place after place. So think of all the stores that have been looted and burned, and then think of all the stores where white people have gone in without masks. Just a group of white people get together, too many of them to be kicked out, and they go in without masks and just walk around without masks and buy something and insist on paying for it without a mask. I haven't ever heard of that happening. But, I mean, there's countless stores that have been destroyed by BLM. And how many stores have had a white riot like I just described? If we can't do something like that, we can't save ourselves from the passports or anything else.
Yeah, and I know we're coming up to the end of the show, so I'll just throw in very quickly what we saw in London last year. You had anti-lockdown protests, and the police were going very, very heavy-handed with them, but the BLM protests, they sat right back. So, you know, it depends who you are as to how you get treated by the authorities, and we know who gives the instructions to the authorities, Patrick.
Okay, well, maybe we'll see the yellow jackets in France come back and start engaging the mask laws and whatever else, and maybe save their country from civil war. But that's all the time we have, so thank you so much, Andy, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Music Radio.
Have equal rights. I have no love of country. White folks are all bad. But when the alt-right folks attack me, it makes me sad.
Extendivite's 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs at Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.